Milburn, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jessica Milburn on behalf of the appellant CR. This case comes on appeal after CR was committed pursuant to the Developmental Disabilities Court Order Custody Act. This act provides a procedure for civil commitment of individuals who suffer developmental disabilities and who pose a threat of harm to others. In this case, CR was found to suffer mild mental retardation, which is a qualifying disability under the Act, and to have committed a forcible sex assault against another. In this case, there are two constitutional questions presented. The first question is whether the Act is unconstitutional because the statutory scheme does not require the state to show that there is a substantial likelihood that a person will engage in dangerous behavior if he is not committed other than the evidence of a past act amounting to a crime. And the second question, whether the act is unconstitutional because the statutory scheme does not require the state to prove that potentially dangerous conduct is linked to the developmental disability. This morning I've prepared to focus on the first question regarding future dangerous behavior. The state's position and the state urges in its brief that because there is no dispute that CR committed a forcible sexual assault upon another and that there's no dispute that he suffers from mild mental retardation, that the state met its burden at the trial. As the act is written, this would be true. But proof of the sex assault and CR's mental retardation alone is not sufficient proof to deprive a person of his liberty in a civil commitment proceeding. To meet established principles of substantive due process, there must be proof indicating that the subject will be an ongoing threat in the future. It's not the appellant's position that the state should somehow provide evidence that would divine the future. However, the 14th Amendment and civil commitment jurisprudence instruct that proof of a substantial likelihood of future harm is the question, and in the way that this act is designed, the only proof required is that of a past act, basically. At 71, Section 71.115 of this act, the term threat of harm to others means a significant likelihood of substantial harm to others as evidenced by one or more of the following acts. And then there are a list of acts amounting to crimes, basically serious bodily injury to another, sexual assault upon another, lewd and lascivious conduct on a child, arson, those types of things. Reading the act as a whole, that is the only evidence that's required, in addition to proof of the developmental disability to commit a person, which doesn't meet due process standards.
What is missing?
Evidence that a person will be an ongoing threat. If proving that a person committed an act in the past does not also prove that they're going to be a threat in the future, which in a civil commitment proceeding of this nature, there needs to be evidence that a person is going to pose an ongoing threat to the community. By showing that they committed a past act, that only shows that they committed a past act, not that they are likely to act in conformity with their actions previously in the future, thereby posing a threat to others and being in need of commitment.
So is some expert testimony required, or how does one predict this?
Well, if you look at sex offender commitment cases, mental health commitment cases that are here in Nebraska, in those cases, expert testimony is often offered, where an individual is evaluated by some kind of expert, psychiatrist, psychotherapist, and then that evidence is presented during the trial phase of those proceedings, so that the adjudicating body can have an idea of what the person may or may not do in the future and what kind of restrictions need to be placed on the person's actions in the future to prevent future harm.
Is that your view then? That's the kind of proof that would be forward-looking?
That's the
What kind of proof is there of forward-looking events?
That would be a kind of proof that would be forward-looking. I guess the my position here is that where the only information that's required for the state to meet its burden is to show that something happened in the past that amounted to a crime. If that's the only evidence that's required, it does not meet substantive due process. In civil commitment cases like sex offender commitment, mental health commitment, there is always a requirement that the state show what the person's propensity for danger will be. Not that they are in fact going to do something in the future, but that there is a propensity for that individual to pose a threat to others based on, and perhaps an evaluation that could
be offered. Well, you would admit that he met the definition of the act as far as what the act requires.
Will you ask again, please, Your Honor?
You admit that he met the definition of what the act requires, that he poses a threat of harm to others. Because under the act, he committed one of the things that's defined under the act. Raped somebody.
Right. The forcible rape.
And that once that's done, he's been found not competent to stand trial in a criminal case.
Yes, sir.
So he doesn't have the competency to stand trial in a criminal case, so he's being dealt with in the civil aspect. Is he not required then to be evaluated with a risk assessment to determine what's the least restrictive form of treatment for this person?
Only for that purpose, to determine what the least restrictive form of treatment is for the person.
And that's done once a year, right?
Yes, after...
What would you do with a person like this?
Ask again.
What would you do with a person like this who's raped somebody and is not competent to stand trial, can't go through the criminal proceeding? What would the legislature do with people like this?
Well, I think it's appropriate for the legislature to have designed a scheme for civil commitment of such a person.
But you think the legislature has to have someone predict what he will do in the future in order to commit him? Is that...
Not predict what he will do in the future, but at least provide evidence that the individual will continue to be a threat. The problem with the design of the act is that the risk assessment you're referring to does not take place until after the court decides that a person should be committed.
Because he's under the definition of the act, he's committed an act that would allow him to be committed.
Correct. Except that that's the only proof that's required in the trial phase of the proceedings. Proof that the act was committed and proof that the person suffers a qualifying developmental disability.
I guess I'm not following your future requirement. When the act proves that you've committed an act that would indicate that you are of harm to others, that you couldn't commit that person and then do a risk assessment to determine what form of treatment you would have for that individual.
Your Honor, what I'm urging the court to do is take a look at some of the jurisprudence that already exists that have to do with our mental health commitment statutes in SOCA. In a case that both the state and the appellant relied on, which is In Re Interest of Blythman, 208 Nebraska 51, this case is from 1981, the court explained that actions and statements of a person alleged this is a mental health commitment with a sex offender, actions and statements of a person alleged to be mentally ill and dangerous which occur before the hearing are probative of a subject's present condition, but a mere recitation of past acts in the absence of a showing that such clearly forms the foundation for a prediction of future dangers cannot serve as the basis for finding that the person should be committed. In order for a past act to have evidentiary value, it must form some kind of foundation for a prediction of future dangerousness and then be probative of that issue.
I'm not sure I quite get your constitutional argument then. You're saying that this statute under consideration fails to include an element with respect to the future?
Yes. Yes.
But this is a little different than those the civil commitment statutes that you're referring to. Here, the defendant has admitted the crime, and he's incompetent to stand trial. And he's held and evaluated. And you're saying that in this evaluation, there should be some type of assessment whether he'll offend in the future?
Yes.
Is that it?
Well, it's, it, you know.
Well. Are we?
You're saying.
Do you leave these people in limbo? Do you? I mean, he is charged with a crime.
Yes, and he's incompetent to stand trial.
Okay, so do you release him?
No, I think it's completely appropriate that the legislature designs a civil commitment action for an individual like CR. But in order for it to meet substantive process.
Are you suggesting that the legislature should have some type of procedure for this type of a situation?
I'm saying this procedure is completely appropriate.
Because I understand
it's
what you're...
It's just that. The risk assessment should take place within the trial setting and not later.
You're saying you have to prove before commitment that he will do this in the future.
That the risk assessment should be performed.
That there's a risk that he will do this in the future, not just the fact that he's done it in the past.
Correct.
Before you can commit it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Could a risk assessment be done without a commitment?
Say that again, sir.
Would the state have any authority to conduct a risk assessment without first committing the individual?
Not according to the statutory scheme, no. Not the way it's written now. I'm well over my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, good morning.
May it please the court, Kirk Brown, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This case presents two questions. Does the due process clause require proof of future dangerousness before commitment, civil commitment is proper? And does the due process clause require a causal link be proven between the mental disability found that the subject suffers and the behavior which renders the subject dangerous? I think the answer to both of these questions is no, and the judgment of the district court should be affirmed. Because they are not in dispute here, I think the findings of the district court are relevant to establish the context in which this argument is being made. CR is 32 years of age. CR has a developmental disability. There is no medication available to treat CR's diagnosis of mental retardation. CR's diagnosis of mental retardation is likely to continue indefinitely. CR has pervasive deficiencies in interpersonal interactions, which is a professional way of saying he doesn't deal with people very well or read social signs very well. On or about April 4, 2007, CR subjected a mentally retarded female, CL, to sexual penetration without her consent. CR has admitted he forcibly accomplished the sexual penetration of CL against her protest. CR poses a threat of harm to others. Now, the first question, and the one that was focused on in oral argument, is whether or not we have to have, the state carries the burden in this proceeding, civil proceeding, of showing a risk of future dangerousness. The only authority...
The precise issue is whether the statute is defective because it doesn't specifically require that.
Yes.
Do you agree?
That's the argument, as I understand it, that the statutory... It's not in dispute, as I understand it, that the statutory requirements were not established. The question is whether there is a shortcoming of the statute because it does not require showing of future dangerousness. And I guess I begin by noting that the only authority that's being offered in support of this proposition is this court's 1981 opinion in Blythman. And in Blythman, this court said, in order to subject a person to be civilly committed, there must be both, one, a finding the subject suffers a significant disability. Now, in Blythman, it was a different disability than the one at issue under this statute, but I think the language is still relevant. And two, a finding that the subject is dangerous. either to himself or to others. It is present dangerousness that I think is the trigger here. If the record has to demonstrate that at the time of the hearing, the individual is dangerous, not necessarily that they were dangerous at one time, but that based on the evidence the state proposes, the state offers, this individual at the time that this factual determination is made, in fact, poses a threat of danger to others. It's not predictive, but it's simply a snapshot of the status of that individual based upon the evidence. And I think that finding satisfies any requirements of the due process clause. Cliveman makes no mention of a substantive due process requirement that there be a finding of future dangerousness, only a finding of fact that the subject is dangerous, which the Act requires and which I believe the district court found and which the record in this case does support.
That's enough for commitment.
Yes, I believe that is.
But that can be proven under the statute as it's written simply by showing commission of one of the enumerated offenses by the individual, is that right?
That is correct.
So the way the statute is structured, past behavior would always be predictive of future dangerousness, either at the time of commitment or thereafter.
Yeah, I believe what has happened is the legislature has chosen certain behaviors which they determine are predictive of dangerousness. They have made that social policy determination that an individual engaged in that, where if the state can establish that an individual with this disability has engaged in that behavior, that is as a social matter, social policy may be treated as predictive of dangerousness.
Well, why isn't there a required nexus between the condition of the party with regard to his mental status and the activity that he committed, which results in the commitment? Why isn't there a required nexus between the two?
Well, I guess my first answer is I don't think it's required because I found no authority that does require it. There are courts that have imposed that, but I don't think there's any federal constitutional authority that says you need to do that. The federal constitutional authority, the Due Process Clause authority, is consistent with Blythman. You have to have one thing, an act, and a determination that this individual suffers a disability. Now, on the record in this case, I think, but to show that...
I mean, you have to have some relationship between the act and the disability. They can't just be a disability that's not related to the act that was committed that was in violation of the statute.
Well, you could take the position that is logical, but what I'm saying is it's not required by the statute and it's not required by the Constitution. And in this case, in the context of this case, you have someone who suffers a mental disability which impacts their ability to interpret social cues and how to interact with other human beings.
And in this fact situation is not competent to stand
and
trial.
With respect to this segment of the nexus part of the question, the courts have specifically said we're dealing with the social problem of how do we deal with individuals who we are confident pose a risk of danger, pose a danger to themselves or to others, and have engaged in behavior when, in fact, there is no other social remedy available.
And
that's kind of a painting yourself into the corner argument, but I think this court's acknowledged.
I think it's relevant, is it not, that this isn't that the context in which these...
Well, that is part of the context with respect to the second assignment of errors.
Right.
This is an individual that, but for this commitment, the state would have no ability, they would be at liberty.
I mean, the finding that he is dangerous to others is significant or is enough of a factual determination to support the commitment at this time.
That's our position, yes.
And
we believe...
Once he's committed, then he must be evaluated to determine what is the least restrictive form of treatment for this individual.
That's correct.
That review is annually?
there is provision for review. I don't, at this time, I don't recall the time frame, but there is provision for ongoing review of that status, as I recall the statute.
And I think we've said, or the Court of Appeals has said in other cases, that you can appeal directly from that adjudication and you don't need to wait until there's a risk evaluation. But doesn't that perpetuate needless appeals? Wouldn't it be better to wait until the court's assessed before you take your appeal on this case to determine all of those issues at one time? But I think we've said
again,
I've said you can't. I think we've said you can't wait, but I don't quite.
Well, again, I don't argue with the logic of that. I'm trying to make this work within the system and the case law that I'm providing. Certainly, this. If we're correct, and the important thing here is the snapshot and the status of this individual based on the record at the time that the district court enters its order, the commitment order. That status, under some circumstances, might well be subject to change. As the district court noted, right now there are no medications that can ameliorate this condition. And again, maybe we don't want this individual at liberty. But then again, then the question becomes, what is the least restraint that the state can impose on this and meet its obligation to the citizens of this state to say we're trying to deal with this very difficult problem? But that hinges on the risk assessment, and I think it's correct to say that our ability to conduct a risk assessment on someone that we haven't already established our ability to intervene on behalf of society is difficult. I just don't know how we would go about pulling people off the street and saying, we don't know if there's anything wrong with you, but we'd like to conduct a risk assessment. You know, there could go all of us. All right. Unless there are any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Colfax County Board of Equalization versus Cargill Meat Solutions Corporation.